Accession number 21060, Reel 2.
Peter Jones, Reel 2.
Right. Yes, we were then dispatched to Iran, and dropping our companies off on the way, because at that stage supplies were coming down from, or going forward rather, to the Russians who around the Caspian, and also the Poles who'd the Polish refugees were coming down south to join the British army, or to be attached to the British army, and then of course, and the Russians didn't get on terribly well. In fact, they hated each other, and so we would receive a column of Poles and would pass them on down the line, probably to Baghdad, and from Baghdad to Palestine.
Whereabouts in Iran were you doing this?
We were stationed at Hamadan. We didn't get to Tehran. Hamadan is the most delightful. I mean, the climate was pleasant, countryside beautiful.
What impression did the Poles make on you who were coming out of Russia?
We liked them. They had a great sense of humor. Of course, we couldn't speak the language and they couldn't speak English, but we seemed to get on, helped by a glass of rum or a glass of beer. Yeah, they were most, but they obviously had a pretty rough time under the Germans.
Under the Germans?
Yes. They came down when the Germans went through Poland. Those who escaped were sent down by the Russians, I suppose, past the Caspian into Iran. And that's where we then had to clothe them. I remember issuing battle dress to the Poles, and there were quite a lot of girls amongst them, women. And of course, the British battle dress is not the most beautiful or comfortable outfit to wear, and frankly, they looked pretty ghastly. But anyway, they required clothing, and the best we could do is to initial them with British battle dress.
Were you giving them weapons?
We weren't, no. We didn't give them weapons. I think they were issued with weapons and did some soldiering when they got down to Palestine.
What state of health were they in?
They were quite good health. Yeah. Where were we?
So you're at Hamadan
Hamadan,
1942.
Yes, and our main task really was to do what we called going, prepare going maps. This is to report on what the countryside was like from the mechanized transport point of view. And you'd report that going down this valley, any column of troops, friendly or otherwise, would be dominated, could be dominated from the hills on either side of the road track. So you prepared these game maps. To judge the feasibility of the enemy coming down south through Iran or our troops going north. To the Iran border.
Were you in Iran very long?
No, fortunately. I mean, we were obviously dying to get down to the Middle East and do some real soldiering. Our prayers were heard, and we were, the brigade was ordered to, after, this is the time of Alamein, the first Alamein, when Rommel reached the outskirts of Alexandria, or the Alamein position, in fact. things were getting rather in an unhappy state of affairs. And in spite of the excellent, although I suppose we probably prejudiced because he was in an army, but Auchinleck we adored and thought he was a brilliant commander. But because he'd been defeated that summer and had retreated to Alamein, I suppose his days were numbered. Anyway, we were ordered to drive like mad to the Middle East, and we did. We were traveling probably 200 miles or more a day back into Iraq, across from Baghdad to Palestine, down over the Sinai Desert, and across the canal into Egypt. And we finally entered that marathon outside Alexandria and came under command 4th Indian Division, which had been in all the campaigns from the outbreak of war, in fact. 1939, 4th Indian Division.
What job?
First attacked the Italians.
What job did you have with the battalion at that time?
I was a company commander.
Do you remember the company?
Yes, D Company. I was commanding D Company for a couple of years, I think, until I was wounded later.
What happened once you got to Alexandria?
Well, then Rommel was threatening to overrun the Alamein line. But fortunately, by then, the 8th Army had been reinforced, including our brigade, and we manned a position at Adam Halfer, I think it was called, behind the Alamein line as we know it. And he attacked that position, but was beaten off. lost a lot of tanks. And although he threatened, it was, the position was stabilized.
So what happened to your battalion?
We were, once the threat was over, we were then posted back into Palestine and went up to hold positions in Syria near Aleppo.
Is this the whole division?
No, this is the whole battalion. So we reinforced that front from Aleppo in case the Germans came through
Turkey.
Turkey, it would be. But of course he didn't.
What were conditions like at Aleppo?
Again, we enjoyed it, but we wanted to really get, instead of being a sort of holding battalion, we wanted to be in the front line battalion. So we wanted to get back to Alamein. Unfortunately, in February 1943, yes, February 43, we returned to the 4th Indian Division, which had fought at Alamein on Rewisit Ridge, but then 4th Indian were left behind in the Tobruk area, while the main 8th Army went up through past Benghazi, Tripoli, and then testing the Germans outside the next line, which is Marath.
So
the Marath line.
So your battalion rejoined the 4th Indian Division at Tobruk?
Yes. Carried out some desert training and then moved up to prepare for the Marath battle. We are now where are we? March 1943. Now we were really in it. And we're absolutely delighted.
And you still had D Company?
I still had D Company. And that's really where the serious soldiering started.
Can you take me through the Battle of the Marath Line as it affected you and your battalion step by step in as much detail as you can, please?
Yeah. Now, the Marath position was focused on the old French and Italian defensive lines round Wadi Zigzaw. Wadi is a wide nullah in the wet season, which obviously was flowing with, well, was a river, but most of the year was dry nullah. But the position was easily reinforced, and the wadi would be widened, deepened, positions strengthened to oppose any attempted crossing of the line. And typical of Monty's plans, he used to do a right jab. Remember, the C was on the right. A right jab on the between the C and the man's defences, and he'd then carry out a left hook. And in this case, it was the New Zealand division, and a splendid division they were. The New Zealand division did a wide left hook round the Mudmartre Hills. The Mudmartre Hills overlooked Marath's defences. The battle was typical. You had a tremendous artillery barrage on the Marath defences, and the British division, the 50 Div. 50 Div was the TT.
Time twos.
That is. They did the. They followed up the artillery barrage and tried to establish a bridgehead through which we, the 4th Indian, were supposed to exploit. Unfortunately, the defences were too strong, and 50 Div were unable to establish a bridgehead. So it was decided to hold the Germans and keep them occupied. Just across the defensive position, and to reinforce the left hook. If you look at a map, there are two passes that go through the Mudmartre Hills, and we were told to exploit those passes, and although it was a shorter hook than the New Zealand one, nevertheless, we could if we, unless we were held up by the Germans, we could probably outflank a number of their formations by getting behind them. And this is, in fact, what happened. But all credit really must go to the New Zealanders, who succeeded with their wide left hook, making our task much easier. And the Germans, after 3 or 4 days, decided they were going to be outflanked, so they withdrew.
So what was
the next line?
What was your own experience at Marath? Your own personal experience?
My company was supposed to be the leading company of the battalion through the bridgehead, which 50 Div were supposed to establish. It involved a 7-mile walk, approach march, and this we set off and you could see the flashes of the guns, and of course the noise of the guns is tremendous. We went through the gunner lines, and then a message came saying, "Sorry, the bridgehead hasn't been successful. Return to base." So we did a 7-mile march back. This was all at night. And when we got there, we found it pretty chaotic, actually, because the right jab hadn't been successful. The battalion were then ordered to go through these passes, through them at Martyr Hills. And typical war, of course, nothing went according to plan. And orders were changed every few hours. It was pretty chaotic. But eventually the CO got it all sorted out. When I say just chaotic, we had recce parties going three different directions, because the battalion were told, first of all, to go in that direction, and then that just cancelled, and another party went off to reconnoitre another route through the mountains. As I said, this is eventually sorted out, as they usually are, and we did get through. Unfortunately, we had our first casualty, the carrier platoon commander, a young subaltern, excellent chap, who was commanding the carrier platoon. He was blown up in a mine, and the Germans were particularly expertise at laying and planting these blasted mines. And on this occasion, they put two or three teller mines, big fat mines the size of a frying pan on the tracks along which we had to travel. And he ran over one and was blown up.
Did you see this happen? Did you see this happen?
Yes, I did. My company was just behind the carrier platoon was just in front of me. They were the sort of shield. And there was a great puff of smoke like a black column of smoke. And this was poor old Wilkinson being blown up.
Were any of the Gurkhas lost as well?
No. But he was a very brave little man. Typical of him, he decided to lead his platoon himself. And you knew jolly well if he went down a track in that campaign, sooner or later you'll run over him. A mine. Unfortunately, that's what happened. So when we'd got him off in an ambulance, I then had to continue the advance. And I didn't do it in transport. That would have been suicide. Then we got onto our feet, and as we were always much happier on our feet anyway, and went down the track through the pass, and did that throughout the night. You would come across an enemy patrol or position, but they didn't hang around. They withdrew pretty quickly, and blew up the road from time to time, but by morning daylight, they had disappeared behind an enormous demolition. They blew up the road, and it would take some time for the sappers to fill the restore the road to a position where the transport could carry on. Anyway, then Arbitan had carried out that task, and another battalion took over the advance. Oh, while we went, continued the march through towards the plains.
Did you come under enemy fire at that time?
No. No. No, they, having blown up the road in various places, their one idea was to get the hell out of it. And by which time, of course, the position had been bypassed, and they were in the plain again. That's really where the tanks and the motorized infantry would come into their own, and we wouldn't be required until we reached the next defensive position, which was, as I said earlier, the Wadi Akarit.
How were your Gurkhas coping with desert conditions?
Quite naturally, very well. They'd been there for some months now, and they're very adaptable, the Gurkha. Well, most soldiers, very adaptable.
Did they pass any comments on the German enemy?
Yes, full of admiration. But they knew that we were equal to anything they could throw at us, if you were well trained, as we were. The German was a formidable adversary. He was a jolly good soldier, and you had to admit it and admire them. But we reckon we were better, certainly as good. And by then, of course, we were getting the better equipment. And up to Lannemain, the anti-tank guns were useless. And the tanks, our tanks, weren't were far inferior to the Germans. In fact, most of our equipment was pretty inferior. But at this stage now, having won the Battle of Alamein, more better equipment was flowing out of munition factories in England through the Mediterranean, and were being unloaded in Alexandria. And the equipment was now as good as the Germans, perhaps a little better.
So you're pushing through to Wadi Akarit?
Wadi Akarit? Yeah. Now, Wadi Akarit was a great mountain massif from the sea. There was a great mountain called Rumana, and then gentle slopes in front of which the Germans had built an anti-tank ditch. I suppose about 4 or 5 miles long. And then you came to the mountains, which were astride the main road, going from Tripoli to Tunis. And this, of course, was the sort of country that we loved. We were back on the northwest frontier. It was mountain warfare again.